Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation.
Books. Where would we be without books? Where would we be without Gutenberg? It's a rhetorical question, sir. But where would we be without books?
From KCRW and KCRW.com, I'm Michael Silverblatt, and this is Bookworm. I am privileged to be talking to Karl Ove Knausgård about the third volume of his ongoing in-translation novel called My Struggle. And last week we began to talk about some of the books of childhood that are so interesting and exciting, and we had brought up Little House on the Prairie, which is a novel about survival in many senses. And survival, although it may make for an exciting narrative, survival is a gritty day-to-day thing. You don't survive finally, now I'm surviving. Every day is a struggle for survival. And that's very true of this novel too. The childhood in My Struggle is like the childhood in Little House on the Prairie, in that it keeps going on. Eventless, yes, but feels like life and death at the same time.
Yeah, and it's no way out there. And that's kind of the frightening thing about writing about the childhood was that. And I remember when I was there in my childhood, I wanted to be an adult. I was kind of really longing for the day I could be on my own. What's interests me in kind of the pattern of this particular childhood is, you know, the kind of dynamic between inside house terror, where you are watched, are very unfree and kind of guarded, and it's like a kind of a prison. And that's the important thing, which I discovered when I wrote it, the extremely freedom that's outside. I mean, where all the kids just, you know, went out to play in the woods and swimming and all that kind of things. And when writing about it, brings back that kind of ecstasy of experience the world, you know, the ecstasy of diving in salt water and all those kind of things. So it wasn't like I had a bad childhood, and I wouldn't, you know, pick another childhood. Both were very important. Both was has to do with life, and those difficulties that I had with my father or I mean, there's something you have to deal with. You have to deal with it every day. And then it could continue, then it could go over, then the father could die. But it's like that's what it is to be alive in a way.
I don't know what it's like to grow up in Norway, but I do know what it's like to go out. And my mother would go through my drawers while cleaning and discover candy. My grandmother had given me money to use as I chose, but would say, "Don't tell anyone." And my mother would find what I'd bought. "Where did you get the money?" I couldn't say. I wasn't allowed to say. "Where did this come from? Did you steal it?" And the terrible feelings that came, both the ecstasy of candy and the threat of being caught, yeah, are part of this book. You have been given 5 krona, improbably, by a woman you've helped to move a tree,
yeah,
from the river.
Yeah.
And the money is found by the father. And immediately, "Where did you get this? Who gave it to you? You bought all the candy." And the candy is shared by all the friends who helped move the tree.
Yeah.
And the father says, "Throw away the candy." How can you throw away the candy? It belongs to everyone. It's such a shocking memory of all the things that happen in childhood where you lack the voice to explain.
Yeah, I remember the fear when I was a kid was so, I mean, completely overwhelming, took over everything. And I think I just wanted to try to, you know, try to imagine how it really was to live under such threats, you know. And as you said, you didn't have any voice because nobody believed in you, and you were under suspicion all the time and accused for all kind of things. And then if you did something wrong, I mean really wrong, you were so afraid because the consequences would be like it's... And that fear is, you know, I haven't, you know, met that in, as an adult later on. It's something different. So it's really to be in the hand of someone else. It's like being in the hand of God or something. And when I have kids myself, I know I have to be careful. But then you can get angry and lose it and lose your temper. And because it's so hard to see and so hard to imagine how it really is to be a kid. I mean, these how important these things are, you know?
Well, children have, I don't know where they get it, the most profound and strict sense of justice. But you had a father who made the cry of it's not fair irrelevant,
yeah.
At least in these books.
Yes, and I think... I'm not sure if he was a bad man, but he was a bad father because he was so. It was a difficult. He wasn't. What's the word in English? If you are, you know, there was no consequence in what he was doing. It was a terror because you never know what was right or what was wrong. He was kind of unstable in his ways. It wasn't like if you do something wrong, I slap your face, because that's probably not good, but it isn't. I don't think that's, you know, threat anything in your character. I have friends who had fathers like that because they were just and this is right. They know, everybody knows it's right. But my father didn't. I mean, he could kind of totally impossible to understand what he was doing, why he was doing it. Could be angry for nothing, you know, and that's the one thing you shouldn't be as a father, you know, unpredictable. And he was very unpredictable and very angry. And he was very young. I mean, I completely understand him now, but I couldn't with then at all. And as a kid, you don't identify with your parents. I mean, that's impossible. They are just someone else.
The mother goes away to study nursing and get a higher wage. The father goes away. And the whole house changes. He's getting his degree, a higher degree in literature, but to be with the mother, in the realm of the mother, under the rule of the mother, the special, beautiful, extraordinary generosity of a person you love having charge of you and trust, as opposed to the man that you fear.
That's the difficult thing I discovered when I was writing about those kind of patterns and relations, because that's what I'm interested in, is relations, is how difficult it was to write about those who were giving you something. I mean, the mother, she's giving. Almost impossible for me to describe her, what capture her voice, what she really did. She was kind of an invisible person in my life, which all the good person in my life have in common. But the father is taking something, and that's easy to, you know, to identify and easy to describe. So there is a very little about the mother in the book. She's good in the book, but it's little. People ask me why. That's just because it's so difficult to, you know, to grasp.
I'm talking to Karl Ove Knausgård, particularly about the third volume of his six-volume work, My Struggle. The third volume has just appeared in English, which is about childhood. One day she comes home and says to him, "No more comic books. I've looked at them. They're terrible to women. I wouldn't mind if you read Donald Duck. But these things, these are sexist and racist and awful." And he Karlova in the book has been reading comics, trading for comics, finding comics in the town dump, using his brother's comics. Everything is comics and comics. And she says, no. He says, never? And she says, no, I am sure. Again, I think that literature is crammed with feeling, that it's made out of feeling. I know my colleagues think it's filled with ideas, with theories, or it is too. But no, I am sure. And then they go to the library, and every week they bring back bags of books, and a new world opens, completely new world. This, I think, is the secret realm of the mother. The mother is literature.
Yeah, you could put it that way. I never thought of that, but of course, she's the one who she opens up for this, and it is a gift.
People speak as if memory, as in Proust, as in many great novels, were only a theoretical thing. But memory involves the memory of pain and pleasure. That's what this book does. And it's not a theory of memory. It's not a theory of aesthetics. I gather that in book six, we will arrive at a theory of aesthetics that will allow us to find out finally why you would call a book My Struggle, Mein Kampf. I mean, this is such a daring thing to do. This is the name of Hitler's autobiography. Yeah. Can you give me a clue? Why does this become possible?
That, you know, I call it My Struggle. I thought this is appropriate title for this book. That's what it should be called. And then the book six is about the consequences of the five other books. Those five other books is a circle, and book six is outside of that circle. Deals only with consequences. Consequences in my family, but also moral consequences and aesthetic consequences. And then I discuss the use of names and real names in my book and in literature. And then I end up with Paul Celan, kind of by accident.
Yes, let me just tell my listeners, Paul Celan is a poet that you would like to know. He lived through the Nazi years and says afterwards, you know, there are those like Adorno who says that after Auschwitz there will be no poetry and poetry is impossible. Celan doesn't say that. He says, after Auschwitz, poetry must find a new language. Germany and German has been destroyed for poetry. And he invents a language of fragments, of stutters, very hard to translate, when well translated, very impressive. But there is no original language. You could not read this in German. It's not written in German. It's written in the language that survives Auschwitz. And my sense was that this series of books are written in the language that survives life, that in life and its terrors, we have to, each of us, find a language that we can speak in. Speak in and speak to others in, and it will be the language of literature. It is a language of struggle, the struggle to find the language that can be used to save life as a meaningful process. Am I anywhere close to something that you might be thinking?
No, you are. That's part of writing this, is to find a way to not even describe the things that normally is impossible to describe, but to say those things you normally can't say, and to kind of express things that's, you know, out of reach in a normal social circumstances, which is, I think, literature is the only way you can do that. And the interesting thing for me about the Hitler Ceylon part is that it's all in the language. There is, I mean, it's all about language. Have you read the Victor Klemperer, the German linguist?
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
Because he was there and he analyzes, you know, what's going on in the 30s in Germany by looking at the language, what's happened to the language, you know. So that's kind of the movement. It starts with Mein Kampf. And it's kind of total destruction, you know, but it's visible in the language till the end where it's just silence, you know.
I'm Michael Silverblatt, and you're listening to Bookworm from KCRW. I'm talking with Karl Ove Knausgård about his book, My Struggle, Book 3, Boyhood. We'll continue after this short break.
I'm Connie Alvarez, producer of Bookworm. Check out our other KCRW programs in the podcast section of iTunes. Shows like DNA, Good Food, The Treatment, Unfictional, and The Business. Or listen on KCRW's smartphone apps. And thanks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. This is Bookworm, and I'm talking with Karl Ove Knausgård about his new book, My Struggle, Book 3, Boyhood, the latest in the series. Book 3 is a return to childhood through the author's incredible memory and sensory detail. But what you just said strikes me as being very meaningful. It's an act of wording the silence. So what I found when reading My Struggle, Book 3, is that yes, we, even in extreme, we climb a tree with these children. They take down their pants and they defecate and they compare their turds.
Yeah.
In other words, constantly the things we don't say are being restored to us. It's like a strange gift. Henceforth, you need no longer be silent. Anything that happened to you did happen, not just in your nightmares, not just in your dreams, not just in your psychoanalytic sessions. It happened and you can say it, and literature is the place to hear it said, yeah?
Yeah, I mean, the only place then that's possible is in writing. But it isn't just to sit down and write like that. It is, there's a lot of things that you have to throw away before you can do it. That's my experience of it. And
what do you have to throw away?
First of all, a sense of, you know, any kind of, in terms of literary quality, for instance, or because it's so connected to self-criticism, and self-criticism is connected to what you can say and what you can't say, you know. There's a kind of, to write this, you have to write bad, to say it very, very, very simple. But I think it's basically partly true, at least. But I think almost everything I know about other people, I know because I've read books. Because if you think what other people really say to you, it's very, you know, at least in my life, it's not much, you know. It's not a lot of revealing going on in my life. It isn't. There's a lot of guessing about what can go on and what maybe have happened and so on. But then the kind of inside information about other people, other societies, other cultures is in literature.
Here is Knausgård across from me. And the books are written so that anyone can read them. They're very accessible. They're full of feeling. I would say it's almost a joke the way in which literary critics are trying to appropriate them for the world of intellect. That's not the world they come from. The world they come from is a world of embarrassment, of feeling, of unblemished emotion. And yet, from time to time, you'll refer to, you say, for instance, that you have wondered whether Hermann Broch, the great author of The Sleepwalkers, is a better writer than Robert Musil, the author of The Man Without Qualities. So we know as we read that you know your great literature. And what's daring about my struggle is that you are being willing to put the difficulty of the literature of the century, Joyce on, aside to recapture the human, to make it human again or restore it to humanness. And in doing so, you risk being wildly misunderstood. Yes?
Yeah, no, but that's what it felt like. This was an enormous risk for me as a writer doing this, because I give away that. And my notion of quality is very, you know, connected to the modernism, the standard of modern literature. If I should read something really good, I read the first sentences of Virgil's Death. And this is, you know, this is kind of the opposite.
Yes.
And you could... And it is, you know, it is very shameful to do it. It's a shameful enterprise writing this. And now I get paid, you know, because now people say this is like this and that and so on. But it still is slightly embarrassing, because I have this notion of quality, which is these books are not living up to.
These works of great literature in some way speak to readers, and they speak from a world of genius. And I feel that in order to restore the possibility of originality and even grandeur, you had to enter the zone of shame,
yeah,
and the zone of ordinary life, which is banality. And you had to ask, can great literature be made of such things? Am I willing to try to write 6 volumes of daily life when all of us are feeling that our daily lives are disappointing and dissatisfying? Can the novel of Knausgård restore our feelings about the importance of daily life? I can't think personally of anything more important. And I'm very grateful when I read these books, because I feel like you've restored my interest in human beings, in going to the grocery, in feeding a child, in making sure that things are taken care of from one day to the next. It's almost as if what you've done is to be a father in the spirit of the mother. Yeah? Can you talk about that?
About being a father?
Being a father, but also parenting life in the novel, being a good parent of daily living.
As a writer?
Yes, okay. As a writer. It's amazing to me.
Yeah. That's too an abstract notion for me to relate to.
It's too abstract. Tell me what you can relate to.
I think that if you should talk about terms of mother-father here, I think my father's problem in the novel and in real life was that he couldn't tune into what was on other people, or couldn't tune into the world. It was a kind of a big detachment between him and the world. And it isn't between the mother there. And it isn't the writer writing this. It's all about tuning in, you know, it's tuning in on detail, tuning in on the different kind of emotions and feelings. And that's what a novel does.
Oh, wow. You just gave it to me. What you told me and what I hear is that you wrote it to do something to heal your feeling of detachment.
Yeah, of course. That's, yeah, that is that is so, yeah.
I think that, but that feeling of detachment is there in every reader, and I feel, although I've only read 3 volumes, you've done a great deal to help me with my feelings of detachment, which can only, you know the expression, poison the well?
Yeah.
To be detached is to have a poisonous attitude toward life, you know, to regard all of the fresh water as being already poisoned, all of the environment as already spoiled. There's something that is in us that needs to be told that there's still some freshness left, that it's not all ruined, that if we can only be accurate, honest, straightforward, unashamed, we can still be allowed to live.
Yeah. I remember when my father died, the priest said something I memorized, which was, and I don't know how it is in English translation, but something, you must focus the gaze or something. I mean, you must, like he was seeing something far away in the distance, that you can't do that, then you, you know, fall, and he did fall. And I've been thinking of that ever since, that you have to see what's there.
You have to find something to look at.
Yes.
Yes.
And you have to connect to it, you know?
Yes.
And he didn't. But I, that's what these novels are about. For me, I mean, personally, there's a connection to the world, you know? In continuously, in all kinds of ways.
Well, I found it in these books, and I'm very grateful for them. Thank you. I've been talking with Karl Ove Knausgård, author of My Struggle, which is a 6-volume series of autobiographical novels, of which the 3rd book, Boyhood, has just been published by Archipelago Books in hardcover. The books are being published by Farrar, Straus and Giroux in softcover. Thank you, Karl Ove, for joining me.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.
You can comment on today's show or read an excerpt from My Struggle, Book 3, Boyhood, at kcrw.com/bookworm. Download the podcast from kcrw.com or from iTunes. You can also listen on demand with KCRW's smartphone apps. My co-producer is Connie Alvarez. Alan Howard is taking over her role while she is on vacation. He's usually associate producer. The technical director is Mario Diaz, with special thanks to my assistant, Jane Parshall. I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next week on Bookworm.
Funds for Bookworm are provided in part by Lannan Foundation. This program is produced in the studios of KCRW Santa Monica. You can access archives of all Bookworm programs and podcasts, the most recent ones, at kcrw.com/bookworm. The Bookworm themes were composed and performed by Ron and Russell Mayle of Sparks.
I'm Michael Silverblatt. Join me again next time on Bookworm, when Alice Notley is our guest.